In the early 20th century, what we now call Broward County was little more than a few hamlets scattered along the central coastal ridge on land just high enough to keep people's feet dry most of the time. Dry was important in early Broward. Residents had already voted to prohibit the sale of alcohol, to the annoyance of the rest of Dade County. So, as Broward historian Dan Hobby recounts, when early Broward sought its independence, Dade's position was, let them go.
Many of the politicians and civic leaders didn't oppose it because they hoped that they'd get rid of all the teetotalers.
All those teetotalers who a few decades later would be hosting spring break in a town that had already earned the nickname Fort Lickerdale. But a real name for Broward was an issue well before that. When it was born in 1915, the early favorite was Everglades County. That would be like naming it Ebola County today, because the Everglades was Florida's big problem, a huge, stinking, pestilential swamp that rendered most of the Florida peninsula unusable and uninhabitable.
Have you gone to the Everglades National Park in the summertime?
Jeff Donnelly lectures on Florida history at the University of Miami. He knows where traces of the original Everglades can still be found.
Have you been eaten by the mosquitoes there? Have you ever gone off the trails and tried to walk through the muck of the Everglades? They're pretty inhospitable to most human occupations.
So they named it instead for the governor who had tried to fix the problem, a former riverboat captain, soldier of fortune, and Jacksonville sheriff named Napoleon Bonaparte Broward. He had run for governor in 1904, promising to drain the Everglades, to puncture its natural barriers, and let the water run to the sea in canals. He thought it would be an improvement.
The political faction to which he belonged in the Democratic Party was linked with the populist movement, and he saw the possibility of a drained Everglades as a expanse of habitable land that yeoman farmers could occupy.
Broward's plan was timely, popular, and according to Tom Van Lent, director of science and policy at the Everglades Foundation, completely oblivious.
There was very little concern about the environment. And if there was a concern, it was centered around the plume hunting.
Big feathers for ladies' hats, a market that threatened the Everglades bird population. About the critical hydrology of the Everglades, nobody had a clue. But as Broward's canals began to suck the fresh water away, salt water bubbled up to take its place, and that was a clue.
For example, the city of Miami lost all of its well fields when salt water intruded because these canals drained all the fresh water off.
Broward was in office only 4 years. His Everglades drainage projects were mostly small-scale and ineffective. But the pressures of development and politics kept the dream alive and installed Governor Broward as the godfather of Everglades drainage.
It's unfair to him because he was acting in a context where most people agreed with him. People most knowledgeable about the Everglades agreed that this was the best thing to do.
In the 1940s, after a major storm flooded much of Florida, Congress passed the Central and South Florida Flood Control Act. In the spirit of Napoleon Broward, it built the levee that now separates the Everglades from South Florida and finally destroyed its natural water flow. Tom Van Lent of the Everglades Foundation.
Without the Central and South Florida Project, most of Broward would be wetland, marsh. Broward County owes its existence to this system of canals and levees.
And to the powerful, flawed vision of Governor Napoleon Bonaparte Broward. I'm Rick Stone in Fort Lauderdale.